Chapter 99. Is. You think it'll be a fine thing for the country. And I'm not again it. Mark my words, I'm not again it. But it's my opinion that there's them at the head of this country as our worst enemies to us nor Boney, and all the Mounseers he's got at us back. For as for the Mounseers, you may skewer half a dozen of them at once, as if they were frogs. I, said Martin Poyser, listening with an air of much intelligence and edification. They never ate a bit o' beef i' their lives. Mostly salad, I reckon. And says I to Mills, continued Mr. Craig, will you try to make me believe as foreigners like them can do us half th harm the ministers do with their bad government? If King George 'ud turn them all away, and govern by himself, he'd see everything righted. He might take on Billy Pitt again if he liked, but I don't see myself what we want why anybody besides King and Parliament. It's that nest o' ministers does the mischief, I tell you. It's fine talking, observed Mrs. Poyser, who was now seated near her husband, with Toddy on her lap. Tea's fine talking. It's hard work to tell which is old Harry, when everybody's got boots on. As for this piece, said Mr. Poyser, turning his head on one side in a dubitative manner, and giving a precautionary puff to his pipe between each sentence, I don't know. Th war's a fine thing for the country, and how'll you keep up prices without it? And them French are a wicked sort o' folks, by what I can make out. What can you do better nor fight 'em? You're partly right there, Poyser, said Mr. Craig, but I'm not again the peace, to make a holiday for a bit. We can break it when we like, and I'm in no fear o' Boney, for all they talk, so much o' his cliverness. That's what I says to Mills this morning. Lord bless you, he sees no more through Boney. Why, I put him up to more in 3 minutes than he gets from paper all the year round. Says I, am I a gardener as knows his business, or aren't I, Mills? Answer me that. To be sure you are, Craig, says he's not a bad fellow, Mills isn't, for a butler, but weak eye the head. Well, says I, you talk o' Boney's cliverness. Would it be any use my being a first-rate gardener, if I'd got naught but a quagmire to work on? Says he. Well, I says, that's just what it is why Boney. I'll not deny, but he may be a bit cliver, he's no Frenchman born, as I understand, but what's he got at spack but Mounseers? Mr. Craig paused a moment with an emphatic stare after this triumphant specimen of Socratic argument, and then added, thumping the table rather fiercely, why, it's a sure thing, and there's the mull bear witness Todd as I one regiment, where there was one man a missing, they put the regimentals on a big monkey, and they fit him as the shell fits the walnut, and you couldn't tell the monkey from the Mounseers. Ah. Think o' that, now, said Mr. Poyser, impressed at once with the political bearings of the fact, and with its striking interest as an anecdote in natural history. Come, Craig, said Adam, that's a little too strong. You don't believe that. It's all nonsense about the French being such poor sticks. Mr. Irwin's seen 'em in their own country, and he says they've plenty o' fine fellows among 'em. And as for knowledge, and contrivances, and manufactures, there's a many things as we're a fine sight behind them in. It's poor foolishness to run down your enemies. Why, Nelson and the rest of them would have no merit I beating them, if they were such awful as folks pretend. Mr. Poyser looked doubtfully at Mr. Craig, puzzled by this opposition of authorities. Mr. Irwin's testimony was not to be disputed. But, on the other hand, Craig was a knowing fellow, and his view was less startling. Martin had never heard tell of the French being good for much. Mr. Craig had found no answer, but such as was implied in taking a long draught of ale, and then looking down fixedly at the proportions of his own leg, which he turned a little outward for that purpose, when Bartle Massey returned from the fireplace, where he had been smoking his first pipe in quiet, and broke the silence by saying, as he thrust his forefinger into the canister, "Why, Adam, how happened you not to be at church on Sunday? Answer me that, you rascal. The anthem went limping without you. Are you going to disgrace your schoolmaster in his old age?" "No, Mr. Massey," said Adam. "Mr. and Mrs. Poyser can tell you where I was. I was in no bad company." "She's gone, Adam, gone to Snowfield," said Mr. Poyser, reminded of Dinah for the first time this evening. "Thought you'd have persuaded her better. Not a told her, but she must go yesterday forenoon. The missus has hardly got over it. I thought she'd have no spirit for TH harvest supper." Mrs. Poyser had thought of Dinah several times since Adam had come in, but as he had had no heart to mention the bad news. "What?" said Bartle, with an air of disgust. "Is there a woman concerned? Then I give you up, Adam." "But it's a woman yon spoke well on, Bartle," said Mr. Poyser. "Come now, you canna draw back. You said once as women wouldna have been a bad invention if they'd all been like Dinah." "I meant her voice, man, I meant her voice, that was all," said Bartle. "Can bear to hear her speak without wanting to put wool in my ears. As for other things, I dare say she's like the rest o' the women, thinks 2 and 2 LL come to make 5, if she cries, and bothers enough about it." Aye, said Mrs. Poyser, "one 'ud think, and hear some folks talk, as the men war cute enough to count the corns in a bag o' wheat why only smelling at it. They can see through a barn door, they can. Perhaps that's the reason they can see so little o' this side on't." Martin Poyser shook with delighted laughter and winked at Adam, as much as to say the schoolmaster was in for it now. "Ah," said Bartle sneeringly, "the women are quick enough, they're quick enough. They know the rights of a story before they hear it, and can tell a man what his thoughts are before he knows 'em himself." "Like enough," said Mrs. Poyser, "for the men are mostly so slow, their thoughts overrun 'em, and they can only catch 'em by the tail. I can count a stocking top while a man's getting his tongue ready, and when he outs why his speech at last, there's little broth to be made on't. It's your dead chicks take the longest hatching. However, I'm not denying the women are foolish. God Almighty made 'em to match the men." "Match," said Bartle. "E, as vinegar matches one's teeth. If a man says a word, his wife LL match it with a contradiction. If he's a mind for hot meat, his wife LL match it with cold bacon. If he laughs, she'll match him with whimpering. She's such a match as the horse fly is to TH horse. She's got the right venom to sting him with, the right venom to sting him with." "Yes," said Mrs. Poyser, "I know what the men like a poor soft, as ud simper at 'em like the picture o' the sun, whether they did right or wrong, and say thank you for a kick, and pretend she didn't know which end she stood uppermost, till her husband told her. That's what a man wants in a wife, mostly. He wants to make sure o' one fool as 'll tell him he's wise. But there's some men can do without, that they think so much o' themselves airy. And that's how it is, there's old bachelors." "Come, Craig," said Mr. Poyser jocosely, "you mun get married pretty quick, else you'll be set down for an old bachelor, and you see what the women'll think on you." "Well," said Mr. Craig, willing to conciliate Mrs. Poyser and setting a high value on his own compliments, "I like a cleverish woman, a woman o' spirit, a managing woman." "You're out there, Craig," said Bartle, dryly. "You're out there. You judge o' your garden stuff on a better plan than that. You pick the things for what they can excel in, for what they can excel in. You don't value your peas for their roots, or your carrots for their flowers. Now, that's the way you should choose women. Their cleverness LL never come to much, never come to much, but they make excellent simpletons, ripe and strong flavored. What dost say to that?" said Mr. Poyser, throwing himself back and looking merrily at his wife. "Say," answered Mrs. Poyser, with dangerous fire kindling in her eye. "Aye, I say as some folks' tongues are like the clocks as run on striking, Not to tell you the time or the day, but because there's some that wrong by their own inside. Dot, Mrs. Poyser would probably have brought a rejoinder to a further climax, if everyone's attention had not at this moment been called to the other end of the table, where the lyricism, which had at first only manifested itself by David Sadovo's performance of Why Love's a Rose Without a Thorn, had gradually assumed a rather deafening and complex character. Tim, thinking slightly of David's vocalization, was impelled to supersede that feeble buzz by a spirited commencement of Remarry Moors, but David was not to be put down so easily, and showed himself capable of a copious crescendo, which was rendering it doubtful whether the rose would not predominate over the moors, when old Kester, with an entirely unmoved and immovable aspect, suddenly set up a quavering treble, as if he had been an alarum, and the time was come for him to go off. The company at Alick's end of the table took this form of vocal entertainment very much as a matter of course, being free from musical prejudices. But Bartle Massey laid down his pipe and put his fingers in his ears, and Adam, who had been longing to go ever since he had heard Dinah was not in the house, rose and said he must bid good night. "I'll go with you, lad," said Bartle. "I'll go with you before my ears are split. I'll go round by the common, and see you home, if you like, Mr. Massey," said Adam. Aye, said Bartle, "then we can have a bit o' talk together. I never get hold of you now." "Eh, it's a pity, but you'd sit it out," said Martin Poyser. "They'll all go soon, for th Miss Sis never lets 'em stay past 10. But Adam was resolute, so the good nights were said, and the two friends turned out on their starlight walk together. "There's that poor fool, Vixen, whimpering for me at home," said Bartle. "Can never bring her here with me for fear she should be struck with Mrs. Poyser's eye, and the poor bitch might go limping forever after. I've never any need to drive Jip back," said Adam, laughing. "He always turns back of his own head when he finds out I'm coming here." Aye, said Bartle. "Terrible woman. Made of needles, made of needles. But I stick to Martin, I shall always stick to Martin. And he likes the needles, God help him. He's a cushion made on purpose for him. But she's a downright good natured woman, for all that," said Adam, "and as true as the daylight. She's a bit cross why the dogs, when they offer to come in TH house, but if they depended on her, she'd take care, and have 'em well fed. If her tongue's keen, her heart's tender. I've seen that in times o' trouble. She's one o' those women as are better than their word." Well, said Bartle, "I don't say TH apple isn't sound at the core, but it sets my teeth on edge, it sets my teeth on edge." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.